Well, the plan is to go on for another, say, 40 minutes or so, if that's all right with you, till, say, 9:15, and then we'll sing, and then we'll be done. Thank you so much for your honesty first time round and questions. Really helpful. A few questions that are here that we could pick up from the text message. Children are learning about sexuality and gender from the age of 4, maybe in primary schools. What would be your advice to Christian parents on talking to their children about this subject?
Thank you in advance for these questions. Although I may not thank you for each one, because some hard ones coming up here. I think when it comes to talking to kids, I think we should be talking to kids. I'm not a parent, so I'm not speaking from my own experience, but I think particularly if kids are being taught things already and these conversations are already coming up, we should be talking as Christians to them and trying to give a Christian perspective. Can you put that question back so I can... That's right. Anyway, it's disappeared. That reappeared very magically. I think there are ways in which Christian parents should be talking to their kids, and we've got to be careful how we do this. On the one hand, we don't want to kind of imply that absolutely anything goes and all thoughts on this are equally true and right, because we don't believe that as Christians. But at the same time, I'm nervous that we don't turn our children into little Pharisees. So what I think we should try not to do as Christian parents is say, listen, there's all those bad people out there in the world and we do things right here. So what we want to do is to teach what God has shown us, to try and teach that this is God's best for us, that if God ever says anything to us, it's always going to be an expression of his goodness, of his kindness, of his love. We're thankful that he speaks to us. But we want to do that in a way that shows that we don't get this right ourselves. We want to, we try to, but we don't get all this right. And so we're not trying to teach our children to look down on other people. We're trying to teach them what it is to be muddled disciples living by grace. And I've seen too many Christian families where they've taught gay people are bad, but we're good. And what happens is the child grows up, meets absolutely delightful gay people, whilst their parents have an acrimonious divorce, and then their entire faith goes out the window. Because they weren't being taught Christianity at that point. They're being taught moralism. Mm. So whenever we teach on what God says to us, we don't want to be teaching moralism to children. We want to be teaching grace. And we want to be teaching the goodness of God and saying, these aren't arbitrary rules God has given us. This is the Creator so kindly showing us what will be the best way for us to live, but that we're not always very good at doing that, which is why we love the fact that God is so forgiving of us. And if he can forgive us, he can forgive anyone. And there are other people who don't know God yet, who don't know his ways, and we want to, you know, draw them in. And, you know, there's a way of doing it that teaches grace.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, can you go on the previous slide, Dave, please? Question here, is it okay to pray not to feel this way in the same way you pray not to be irritable or angry?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's good to pray not to feel anything that we sense is not morally right or of the Lord. So, absolutely. God doesn't promise to remove the temptation. We do see in verses like 1 Corinthians 10, whatever it is.
17. I think it is, actually, because I remember that as a kid. If I got that right, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I really hope that's wrong. that God does promise to kind of give us a way out of temptation, so we never have to sin. But he doesn't promise to remove the temptation, are you right?
No, it's moved. Where's it gone?
The Council of 1972, when they moved that verse.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm sorry, church, that your pastor doesn't know the scriptures, but
is it gone? It
there are
gone.
Other good churches in Cardiff we can recommend. I think it's a good thing to pray for anything that is distressing us about our own sinful nature, which should be a lot of things for any one of us.
13.
To you were four out.
Yeah.
Yeah, to pray for God, it's a good thing to pray. But we need to also bear in mind that God's will might be actually for us to learn godliness through fighting temptation rather than just through having the temptation taken away. So we can pray for it. It's good to pray against some of those inclinations in our hearts that we know aren't right. But ultimately we're praying your will be done, and if this fight is going to be a means by which I learn just to really cherish grace more, because this is keeping me constantly humble, constantly humiliated, constantly flat on my face, then hey, if that's the way this is going to be, just help me to be godly with it.
Thank you. Question here, which I was wondering too, what advice would you give to someone invited to attend gay weddings, adoption ceremonies for same-sex attracted friends, couples, family members?
Thank you. Let's deal with the weddings first. I think I get asked this a lot, and I love it, because when a Christian says, I've been invited to a friend's wedding, it's going to be someone of the same sex, my initial reaction is, thank you for being the kind of person the gay person wants at their wedding. It strikes me that Jesus probably would have been invited to those kinds of occasions too. So a word to others of us who are never invited to such things, we've got to ask ourselves, are we being the kind of friend of gay people that Jesus would have had us be? So that affirms the question, it doesn't answer it. It just means I think you're probably doing something right if you're getting those invitations to start with. I don't think there's one answer that is going to be right for all situations. I think there are good reasons to not go and good reasons to go. And there are bad reasons to not go and bad reasons to go. So a good reason to not go is if you think my attending this is only going to be seen as a form of affirmation and agreement where I know I don't agree. And I don't want it to be misinterpreted in that way. Or if your conscience is saying, I don't think this is morally right, I don't think it's right for me to be there while it happens. Those are two good reasons not to go. A good reason to go might be that, well, they know where I stand with this, so my presence isn't going to be misunderstood or give the wrong impression. And I believe I can be present in a way that doesn't compromise my beliefs or my witness or whatever it might be. And actually, I might be the only Christian in a room with a couple of hundred people who aren't. So it may be a good opportunity just to be a Christian presence there. A bad reason not to go is because you just think it's horrible and disgusting. I think we want to be careful that we're more disgusted by our own sexual sins than we are by other people's. And a bad reason to go is because we just don't like conflict and we're thinking this is the path of least resistance and I don't want a tense conversation, so I'm just going to go along. But there's probably, it will always depend on what kind of conversations you've had beforehand, the kind of relationship you've got. What I would say is whatever you do, do it in a way that maximizes both grace and truth, both of which we find together in Jesus. He's full of grace and truth, so we can't play one off against the other. So whatever we do, we want people to be aware of just how precious they are to us. And we also want people to be aware of the fact that we have a different ultimate worldview than they do. That doesn't mean that's the moment to have the big conversation about what you believe about homosexuality, but you do want to honour the fact that you belong to Jesus Christ. And that belonging to Jesus Christ makes their friendship more precious to you and not less precious. So whatever you do, if they get out of it that, wow, Jesus means even more to you than they realised he did, and that they mean even more to you than they realised they did, whatever you've done, if you've given them that impression, you've done the right thing.
Another question on ministering to other people and relating to other people who this is a particular issue for them. So how would you counsel someone whose son or daughter has just come out as gay?
I presume come out to them rather than in a, I think probably the most important thing to say is just don't freak out. If a child discloses something like that to you, it was probably not the easiest conversation for them to have. So I think the very first response should probably be something along the lines of, we're really grateful that you've shared that with us. That was not something you had to do, but something you've chosen to do. And that means a lot to us, and it probably wasn't easy, so we just want to thank you for privileging us with that part of your life. And I think irrespective of where they're at on the issue and where you're at on the issue and where differences may or may not be, now is the time for them to know how much you love them. Because again, even if the child is wanting to be a Christian, they're still going to be a bit wondering whether this is going to affect the relationship and how you're going to react. So I think this is the moment, irrespective of what direction they might go in, to say, we've always loved you, and this doesn't change anything, just in case you thought it might do. So just let them know how thrilled you are to be their parents. By the way, your response to this moment will probably shape the relationship you have with your child for the next 20 years, one way or the other. And I've seen this go both ways. If your immediate reaction is, right, Romans 1, sit down right now, I'm afraid that is going to have probably a negative impact on your relationship. Which is why I think, particularly if you're sensing they're not wanting to walk with the Lord on this issue, you're playing a long game here, and they need to know that your love for them is not performance-based. So it's a great opportunity to model grace and unconditional love, and not to imply any kind of rejection. So I think I would say those things. When it comes to other scenarios, they start dating someone, how do you respond? Is just to be consistent. So if you've never been bothered about one of your other children, you know, dating someone of the other sex and maybe sleeping with them before marriage, don't suddenly start drawing lines with this child just because it's a same-sex relationship. Does that make sense?
Yep, sure.
My hunch is if your child starts dating someone of the same sex, is get to know them. The other person's most likely delightful. And I would, in that scenario, I would want to say, listen, a friend of our child is a friend of ours, and we would love to get to know you. The other person's probably not a Christian believer at all, and don't blame that person for what your child is doing. Some Christian parents tend to scapegoat that the moment the child is either in a relationship with a non-Christian or with someone of the same sex, they tend to think, well, that person's clearly the issue, so they're not allowed anywhere near the house. And what you then do is you force your own child to choose between the parents who are sounding quite unenthusiastic about them or the person they're in love with, which is probably not going to go well for you as their parents. So disapproving of the relationship doesn't mean you have to disapprove of the person. So my instinct would be to offer hospitality at that point and actually to draw this other person into your family life as well and get to know them and keep a relationship with them.
Thank you. Someone's texted in, I think, really, really helpfully. Mental health and suicide problems seem quite prevalent amongst same-sex attracted people due to discrimination, those struggling with gender identity. How do we talk sensitively about this in a way that doesn't trigger or harm vulnerable people we talk to?
Thank you very much for that. That's such an important issue, because it's right, there are a number of very serious mental health issues that often can go with some of these kinds of situations. And I think one of the most important ways we talk sensitively about this in a way that doesn't trigger or cause harm is, as I hope we have been doing, which is to show how we're all in this together. Jesus doesn't draw a line between straight people and gay people. He draws a line between himself and sinners, and then offers himself to sinners. And so, again, if we understand his teaching on human sexuality rightly, it is going to be deeply humbling and deeply challenging for all of us. And if it isn't, you've not understood it. So I always want to kind of talk about this in a way that applies to all of us before talking about some of the ways it might apply to some of us. So keep levelling the playing field, show how we're all in the same boat. If there's no hope for gay people, there's no hope for anyone. It's as simple as that. So there's no need for us to single out this issue for special condemnation or derision. It's interesting, almost every time that the New Testament mentions homosexuality, it's in the context of a whole bunch of other sins. So Paul doesn't single it out. He bundles it in with things like adultery, greed, slander. So he's not singling out this for kind of special treatment. He's just showing it. It's one example of many of things that implicate every single one of us. So I think we want to have that same consistency too. So you ever taught when you were a kid, if you point your finger at someone, you've got three fingers pointing back at you? You heard that one? It's true theologically. So let's be most bothered about our own sin and not somebody else's. As Christians, we believe one of the major things the Holy Spirit does for us is to convict of sin, part of the Spirit's job. And it strikes me we're often very, very good at being deeply convicted of other people's sins. So I remember doing a workshop for a group of pastors in another part of the country a few years ago, and the workshop was on how can we share Jesus Christ with our LGBT friends. And one of the pastors said to me, how can you talk to a gay person without being disgusted by them? And I thought, okay, well, points for honesty and many less points for tact. But my answer was by being more disgusted by your own sin. Paul in 1 Timothy says, Christ Jesus has come into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the worst. That's interesting. Paul described himself as the worst of all sinners. And I don't think it was because Paul had done an extensive Barna poll of the entire Christian church and discovered he actually was the worst sinner. You know, it had to be someone, turns out it's me, a bit embarrassing. I think what Paul is showing us is that when you know your own heart, it's very, very hard to believe there's another human being out there who's more messed up than you are. And I think if each of us has that perspective, that we're most concerned about our own sin, it will just give us a posture and a tone that makes us very, very safe for other people. Mm-hmm. And if a whole church is behaving with that mentality of, listen, if God's standards are low enough that he takes me, then he can take anyone. If a whole church is feeling and behaving in that way, it will be the safest place in town. There won't be judgmentalism, there won't be condemnation, there will be a deep sense of God can save any of us if he can save me. I think that will make us very approachable.
Maybe someone here this evening experiences same-sex attraction, and this is the first time they've heard this kind of reflection. Maybe this is the first time you've heard Christian teaching on the topic. What would you say the prospects are, for want of a better expression, for someone who is a Christian and same-sex attracted? What does that look like in terms of the future?
It could look like, basically the answer is the same as for anyone in one sense. None of us knows whether we're going to get married or not. My advice to people who are same-sex attracted tends to be, don't presume you won't get married and don't presume you will, which I think is probably good advice for anyone. So as I said earlier, some people do find that they can marry someone of the other sex. Some people don't. That's true of heterosexual people too. number of people who will be long-term single involuntarily in the church for a whole host of reasons, and others who are single voluntarily. So the prospects, I think, will depend largely on how healthy we are as a church at being family to one another and at having the kind of intimacy the Bible says we should be having if we're really brothers and sisters in Christ. So your life together as a church family is going to answer that question, because if it looks as though the church is primarily built up of nuclear families, that's the basic unit of church life, and anyone who's not got their own nuclear family kind of doesn't quite fit in, then the prospects here will be pretty bleak. But if this is a church where actually, irrespective of your marital status, irrespective of whether you have children or not, you have a ton of real family, then the prospects are amazing. So how we do church, our culture together, how we treat one another is going to massively, this is the point of Ed's book, is going to show whether our teaching is plausible or not. So, and again, the other thing just to bear in mind is that the Bible refers to both marriage and singleness as being gifts. What we tend to do is forget that there are ups and downs to both. And we tend to compare the downs of singleness to the ups of marriage. And so when we're thinking, what are my prospects? We tend to be thinking, will I get married or not? Because marriage feels easier. Whereas what we need to recognize is that there are also ups of singleness and there are downs of marriage. So getting married doesn't necessarily mean easier life. I know some people who are in difficult marriages. I know some people, tragic to say, who are lonely in their marriage. So marriage is not a kind of guarantee that we're not going to experience any of the hardships that we think we're getting away from in singleness by getting married. Not to be down on marriage, it's an amazing gift from God, but the prospects for all of us, whether we're married or single, is we are going to experience unfathomable goodness from God and the difficulties of life in a broken world. Some of us will experience both of those things within the context of singleness. Some of us will experience both of those things in the context of marriage. But you always get both either way.
Can we talk a bit about friendship, which you've alluded to so far? And a couple of questions here have come in. How do you maintain good spiritual friendships with men without your feelings getting in the way? So prayer triplets and small groups, how do you manage this? I guess that's a particular one for someone who's experiencing same-sex attraction, but we could step out of that and talk about deep friendships and relationships more widely. And then how do you pursue the types of friendships that Jesus had that you talked about without feelings getting in the way? Similar point.
Yeah, so I think...
there's a specific question there in relation to someone who's experiencing same-sex attraction, but then step out from that one and talk about friendship for a moment.
So for those of us who are same-sex attracted, we want to be conscious, obviously, of the fact that there might be the potential for inappropriate feelings. I don't think we want to be terrified of getting close to other guys in case of that, but I find the thing that helps me the most, other people have said similar things, is that having a plurality of deep friendships is a really good way of helping make sure that no one friendship becomes kind of disproportionate in our heart. If I feel as though I have deep intimacy with a range of friends, that's most likely going to prevent me from making any one of those friendships feel like it's the friendship that I truly need for life to work. So having a range of friendships helps, not putting all the eggs in one particular friendship. Each friendship will be unique just because each person's different, and we won't get the same thing out of every friendship. But I guess one of the things I want to guard against is biblical friendship biblical deep friendship doesn't require exclusivity. What does require exclusivity is marriage and a romantic friendship. So that's not that the question was asking this, but that's why I'm uncomfortable with some people who would say, well, can I have a romantic but non-sexual friendship with someone of the same sex? My answer is no. Because I think what you're trying to do is mix two things that don't mix, because friendship doesn't require exclusivity. Romance is really in kind of marital country. That does require exclusivity, and I think trying to do both at the same time means that something's going to end up giving. It's a bit of an unstable compound. All of which is by way of saying that one of the warning signs to me that a friendship might be just in the very early stages of becoming unhealthy is if I'm feeling a kind of jealousy for it, a need for exclusivity around it, I just want this person all to myself, that's normally a sign I'm getting the friendship out of proportion.
Yeah,
I think generally, for all of us, we do need to work harder at friendship. Those of you who are kind of student age and a bit beyond that, it's an easier stage of life because you tend to be doing life more with other people anyway. Once there are marriages and mortgages and kids and work life is more busy, it gets harder to make new friendships. So do take care of stewarding the friendships you already have. Marriage doesn't mean you now have all your friendship needs met by your spouse. I've seen marriages flounder because of that. You still need friends. So don't think that marriage is your way of graduating out of friendship into marriage, and you now don't need your other friends. You do. The friendship will look different. You won't see them in quite the same capacity as you did before, but you will still need them. I've got a friend who was a very close friend of me and a group of others, and had one of those kind of crazy, met this girl, within minutes they were dating, within days they were engaged, and he disappeared off the map entirely when they started dating. We just didn't see him again. And, you know, they got engaged very quickly, got married, and he kind of resurfaced a few years later saying, very apologetic that he just kind of disappeared, but also very mindful of the fact that that hadn't done him good. And I used to call him Frodo, because at the moment the ring went on, he vanished. And if your married friends do that, it's easy to resent that, because it is a form of rejection. But if you're the person who's now started dating someone that's looking serious, don't neglect your friendships, because you still need them. For those of us who are already married and we're sensing a need for friendship, guys tend to find it a bit harder to kind of naturally strike up friendships than girls do. It's why it's good if church gives us natural kind of opportunities to get to know a wider range of people. But it's something to take seriously, because if I've understood the book of Proverbs rightly, you can't be wise in God's world without friends. And so if you're feeling as though you've got a deficit of friendship in your life, that's a spiritual issue that you need to pray about and to ask God to provide and to try to build in time to get to know other people and to build friendships.
Really, really helpful. A question here. I'm same-sex attracted, but recently have been thinking that I am also attracted to the other sex, making me bi. Am I just kidding myself because I want a nice Christian marriage?
Thank you for being so honest, whoever asked that. I guess the answer is you might be, you might not be. You might be kidding yourself, you might not be kidding yourself. So I think it's one of those things, again, to pray about and to say, Lord, I'm not sure if I'm feeling attraction to people of the other sex. I think I might be. Can you give me clarity on that? Can you help me to know if this is something that would be, if there is an opportunity to marry and I'm wanting to marry, that's a good thing to pray for. Marriage is a good gift, so it's a good thing to pray for. Mm. It's not a healthy thing to pin all of your hopes on, but it is a good thing to ask the Lord for, us to say, Lord, I'm sensing I might be finding people of the other sex attractive. If it is part of your plan for me to be married, I'd love to be married, please provide. What you shouldn't do is, I know some Christians who thought, well, if I look at heterosexual porn, maybe that will awaken within me the feelings of opposite sex attraction that I want to have and need to have if I'm ever to get married.
The kind of bad side, the reparative therapy kind of approach.
Yeah, I've seen some Christian counsellors even suggesting that as a response to same-sex attraction. That is a wicked thing. Jesus has already shown us that to look with lust is to commit adultery in your heart. If you think that could be the route into marriage, your marriage is not going to be great if that is if that has been your way into it. And I don't think you're going to be someone who will be a massive blessing to be married to. Again, if you've been fueling this with pornography. That's a word, by the way, to all of us. Let's just assume there's a good number of us in this room struggling with pornography. It's a horrible thing. And most of us know that. And it's the kind of battle that you're not designed to fight on your own. And that's where, again, that's why we need friendship. We need people who we can say, I've really messed up in this area of life. Give me some help, give me some encouragement. So I just wanted to widen that out, because I'm sure it's an issue for a number of us. So back to the question, sorry. Am I kidding myself because I want a nice Christian marriage? I don't know. It's possible. It's not inevitable that that's the case.
On the friendship point, I think there's a quote in Ed's book which I just stuck with me, which was that he says, everyone within the church family should have at least one or two people who know pretty much everything that's going on in their life. I think it's lovely. It sets the bar not that high, because it's not everyone needs to know everything, but at least we all have someone or two who know the big things. There's no kind of skeletons in the closet that no one knows, and then the kind of crisis happens or we're struggling in silence. And I just encourage you to really make the most of the Christian brothers and sisters around you within church, whether that's through small groups or one-to-ones or chat with some of the pastoral team. We'd love to connect and help with you.
And I think one of the signs of that is we have people who just instinctively know how to pray for us. So even if they haven't seen us for a bit, and they're just hearing of what's going on in our lives from someone else, they'll just instinctively know how we need to be prayed for in that kind of situation. It's also worth thinking, I need other people who know that about me. Who do I know that for with somebody else as well? Who can I be that person to? Which other two people in church can I be that to?
Yeah, great. Our time is almost up, but one thing which we just wanted to share at the end is there's a ministry that Sam is involved in called Living Out, and we've got a short video that we're going to play that shares a bit of your story and introduces Living Out, and maybe you could give a comment or two about what Living Out is at the end. Tell us about Living Out.
So Living Out is it's a website that me and a few others put together about 4 or 5 years ago now, I think. Really because all of us were conscious that the world has its own kind of narrative on when it comes to human sexuality, and we wanted to show that actually that we as Christians have our own narratives too. And so we thought it would be useful to have a number of video testimonies of different Christians wrestling through issues of human sexuality, just to show that actually there's more than one way of working through this issue, not just the way our culture is telling us to. So we hope it's that the website has video testimonies videos on answering other questions, other resources and articles. We hope it's a help to those who are wrestling with this themselves, to Christians more generally, trying to think kind of biblically and compassionately about this issue. And we also hope it's a good resource to anyone from outside the church who wants a kind of Christian account of how we deal with these kinds of issues. So I've had school teachers write and telling me they're using the videos in school lessons to give examples of how different religions respond to sexuality. This is, which is great if they're using it for that kind of thing. So livingout.org is the website.
Fantastic. Our time is almost done, but I just wanted to say a couple of things. One, we're going to sing shortly, Your Grace Is Enough, as we think about the amazing grace that God has made available to us. We mentioned about friendship and sharing the big issues in our lives with other people and not struggling on our own. And there's an opportunity at the end of our time, if you'd like to pray with someone from the pastoral team, there'll be an opportunity here at the front. It may be the most natural person to share and pray with is a friend, someone you came with, or a close a person you already know. But maybe you'd like to pray or share with someone who you don't know so well, or you don't have someone like that. And there'll be a few folks at the front here at the end to offer prayer with you and just to kind of encourage you in your journey. And please do follow up outside of the context of our evening. This is just a one-off, but our lives and ministries and challenges continue week on week. Sam, thank you so much for being so honest, for sharing your story, for sharing the scriptures so clearly and creatively and engagingly. And God bless you in the work with Ravi Zacharias and with the church in Maidenhead and in your writing ministry. Let's show our appreciation to Sam for sharing with us this evening.
Thank you.
Sorry we didn't get to go through all the questions that were coming in. As you can imagine, loads were coming, but we tried to do the kind of highlights and summaries of them as they came in.